It's more than just words on a page, more than ink and paper. It's a universe waiting to be explored, to learn from, to laugh with, to see life through a different lens. Every story leaves its mark, and every reader leaves with a bookmark. Welcome to The Bookmark with Batya Bricker.
Good afternoon, I'm Batya Bricker, and you are tuned to Chai FM's Bookmark, the home for stories and the people who love them. Well, books are very much part of my life, every aspect of life, I think. And so today we're going to the kitchen. We're tucking into cookbooks, those delectable volumes that inspire you to pull off a magnificent Friday night dinner, just a delicious weekday meal, or at the very least, offer a feast for the eyes while you snack on something far less ambitious. Cookbooks have been with us far longer than we might imagine. The oldest ones predate modern kitchens, formal recipes, and even paper books themselves. But the first cookbook ever printed in the form that we would recognize today was a Latin volume called On Honest Indulgence and Good Health. I don't know if that title would sell a book today. It was written in 1465 by Bartholomew Platina, and it was published in Rome a few years later. Platina didn't just list instructions. He wove together technical cooking guidance with anecdotes, reflections on eating habits, and advice rooted in the seasons, the elements, and the bodily humors. So in many ways, it's a blueprint for what the best cookbooks still do today. And while YouTube and social media now offer more recipes than any of us could cook in a lifetime, cookbooks remain something else entirely. They are guides, yes, but they are also companions. They reflect how we live, how we gather, what we value, and who we feed. So today on Bookmark, we are eating our words and savoring the stories behind the food. If you have a cookbook that you love using and you can recommend, let me know. I'd love to hear on the SMS line 061-895-1019. Some of the trends we're seeing in cookbook publishing include health, obviously, as being a top priority, linking cooking to gut health, to longevity, and to well-being. Cookbooks often even include now nutritional framing alongside recipes and focus on local sourcing of ingredients and low waste. The newest and biggest on the shelf in this category is Eat Yourself Healthy, the new one from Jamie Oliver. It's classic Jamie. He's accessible, he's down to earth, he's chatty. You can expect colorful, exciting recipes, even when time is tight. And when you're looking for ways to get your 7-a-day, yes, he considers it a 7-a-day, not a 5-a-day, hacks to boost your health, Jamie will arm you with ideas and inspiration. And his main focus, he says, this book is all about the great things you can have and not what you can't. But now we stop for an ad break and then I'll continue with some trends.
Turn the page. It's The Bookmark with Batya Bricker.
This is Bookmark, and you're listening to Batya Bricker. Today, we're in the kitchen looking at books that inspire us to create the delicious food we feed our loved ones. Tell me what you're cooking from. What are the books that guide you and take you somewhere? Use the SMS line 061-895-1019. So some of the other trends that we are seeing on the shelves looking at publishing cookbooks, the first is environmental concerns that have impacted on eating habits. So lots of plant-based recipes, a focus on things like vegan and keto. We're seeing much simpler and more accessible cookbooks for weekday meals. No intimidating techniques. It's just cooking, fabulous cooking for home cooks. So there are fewer hard-to-find ingredients and more emphasis on success and confidence in the kitchen. So the two things that we're seeing a lot of, and you can turn your nose up if you would like, but we all have to admit it, that we are using the air fryer more and more. And it's not just for slabs of schnitzel or loads of chips that the teenage boys seem to consume, in my house for sure. There is so much to love about this new way of preparing food. It's healthy, it's quick, and it's easy, but you do cook differently. So a recipe book is a good idea even for a seasoned cook. My go-to is Herman Lensing's one. Herman Lensing grew up in Upington in the Northern Cape, and he qualified as a chef, but he has since become one of the celebrity chefs in the Afrikaans world on screen and on the page. And his book, Air Fryer, I use all the time. I can tell you that his recipe for the whole barbecue chicken has become a regular feature on my weekly menu. And the other thing is one-pan cooking. Have you tried this before? I cook at least one dish a week this way. There's less fuss, less washing up, and the recipes are often simple, but quite glamorous, actually. I'm such a fan of preparing food in this new way. I also have cookbooks that I go to again and again. I asked this question of a friend, Stacy, my friend Stacy, and she's a cook supreme who is always entertaining and constantly turning out magnificent Michelin star worthy meals for enormous crowds. Her first choice, she said, without hesitation, is the June Edelmuth Hooked on Cooking books. And of course, the Black Myrna Rosen. And I'm sure I have listeners shaking their heads in agreement, because many of you will say the same. It's a book that's no longer in print. So if you have a copy, hold on to it. It's worth its weight in gold. Both offer reliable, old-fashioned recipes that always deliver. The other book Stacy turns to time and time again, and that's a little bit newer, is Karen Malamud's book, A Pinch Of. Being the experienced cook she is, Karen's recipes are often the starting point, and then Stacy would make it her own, as I do with a recipe. And I guess that's the real trick of good, great cooking, should I say. It's making it personal with your own signature extra something. I also love to cook, and I would say that top of my list would be the books from the Sharons. Sharon Glass and Sharon Lurie. We have a house of boys, and so we eat a lot of meat. And Sharon Lurie's tried and tested recipes from Cooking with the Kosher Butcher's Wife and A Taste of South Africa have been made over and over again. In fact, I think it's no exaggeration to say that I have made Chuckleberry Spin probably 100 times. Besides, for all the sides and the desserts, it is the meat recipes, the beef, the lamb, the chicken, that are incomparable. And of course, Sharon Lurie has a great sense of humor and a sense of fun in her cooking. A new kid on the block is Romy Rabinowitz's book, Ever So Lovely. In it, Romy celebrates tradition, family gatherings, and good food. It's filled with homely anecdotes and recipes I would dub as contemporary Hamish. It's new to my cookbook selection, but I have a feeling it's going to become a well-thumbed and gravy-stained addition too. One of my favorites is a book that is called The Table by Elmarie Berry. Elmarie Berry is a renowned South African food and wine blogger. She's a culinary author and a stylist. And she won the Gourmand World Cookbook Award for Best Mediterranean Cuisine for her book called The Table. She actually began her career in 2007 by selling homemade pasta in Port Alfred, building a successful business from very humble beginnings. She is now a social media sensation and hosts workshops and cooking classes that draw an international audience. Berry blends the vibrant flavors of South Africa with the rich heritage of Middle Eastern cuisine, guided by the cherished recipes of her Lebanese granny. And in this cookbook, tradition meets innovation as generations collide around the dining room table, creating unforgettable moments with every dish. And because you do eat with your eyes, I adore this book for its exquisite styling and stunning photography. If you've ever wondered who is that crazy person buying edible flowers from Woolworths or picking from my garden. Sometimes it's me making the food look just completely glamorous and wonderful. If crafting spectacular but easy dishes is something you like, Elmarie Berry's book, The Table, is highly, highly recommended. And I can tell you that her Lebanese shredded lamb with rosmarino is a showstopper. On one pot cooking, which is a new way of cooking, maybe it's actually an old new way. Things like poiki and cholent are essentially one pot too. But the book I think to get in the one pot category is a book by Louisa Holst. She is a renowned Cape Town-based foodie and author with a couple of books under her belt. And here is a collection of delicious dishes that are cooked on the stovetop using only one pot or pan, and they're ready in under an hour. It saves time, effort, and money with the added bonus of less washing up. And the food is ideal for busy people, for families and young adults, as well as for weeknight meals and even camping trips. And it's got cooking tips, it's got soups and stir fries and pastas and rice dishes to batch cooking and sweet treats. I would love to hear what book you cook from. What are the recipes that you keep going to again and again? Let me know on our SMS line 061-895-1019. And if you have an Elmarie Berry artfully combining Middle Eastern flavors with South African style, our next author uses French cuisine to inspire her local dishes. Françoise Melby Anthony was married to Lawrence Anthony, and together they started the world-renowned game reserve Tula Tula and produced numerous books you will know, the Elephant Whisperer books. After the break, we talk to Françoise about wildlife, food, and unexpected guests at the table, so stay tuned.
Turn the page. It's The Bookmark with Batya Bricker.
Welcome back. You are tuned to Bookmark, Chai FM's home for stories and the people who love them. I'm Batya Bricker, and today it's my delight to be joined by Françoise Melby Anthony, the author of a delightful cookbook come memoir called Dining with Elephants. Welcome, Françoise, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Batya. Lovely to see you again.
Whenever I mention you or this book, and whoever I mention it to, the response is inevitably, oh, I love those Elephant Whisperer books. So this title, Dining with Elephants, is a very welcome fourth edition to the Elephant Collection from the Elephant Whisperer, Lawrence Anthony, and his wife. The Elephant Love Affair has become an iconic brand in of itself, and the stories of Tula Tula, of the wildlife, of conservation from the Antonies are renowned the world over. So in comes this book, Dining with Elephants, and in many ways it combines the two loves of your life, food and the wild. Your first book, which did that too, was called An Elephant in My Kitchen. And it was dubbed by the Daily Mail as the most magical book about the African bush since Born Free. Now, this is the second book. Tell us about the inspiration for this one.
Well, it's been a long... My second book was The Elephants of Tula Tula. There was a follow-up on The Elephant in My Kitchen called The Elephants of Tula Tula, which came out 3 years ago. This one, Dining with Elephants, it's been a long work in progress, because writing down the recipes and those recipes were created were really by pure imagination and trial and errors. So we were just putting, it was my kitchen staff, we were just putting things together, and we eventually succeeded in, despite a few mistakes, which are writing the book actually, which are quite funny. Because you cannot succeed everything in life. There are mistakes as well. Of course. You have to talk about them, because, you know, it just shows that nobody's perfect. Those recipes were hard work because we didn't have any recipes. So, you know, the measurement of the number of grams. And I, you know, the lady who did the editing of my book from my publisher, she was asking me, Françoise, are you sure you must put a tablespoon of cayenne pepper in that dish? And I thought, I think it's a dash. Let's include that. No, you need the exact amount of gram. I said, oh my God, how can I do that?
So, how do you measure a dash?
And so then my way of cooking has become much more technical, let's say. So, but now my kitchen, I promise you, they all follow exactly the recipes, like from the book. So now we've got a much more constant kind of cuisine at the Safari Lodge. And, you know, I always want to say, you know, most of these recipes were created 25 years ago when there was no Google, there was no internet. You know, we had to use our imagination and what you could find around in Mpangeni, you know, so the supplies were quite low. And I didn't have the selection that I had when I was studying cooking in Paris, for example.
I'm sure there's not quite the same selection at the local Mpangeni spa. You're not quite able to get the same range of vegetables or rocket or whatever it is that you want to include. But I think that's what's so lovely about the recipes is that they're actually quite simple. It's about making magic with quite simple ingredients, actually.
Exactly. Because you see, even if I studied, I did a few courses in France, but you cannot create real French cuisine like they do, very elaborate. And it's going to be simple anyway, because, you know, we are in a lodge here. We're in the middle of Zululand. You know, we don't have access to everything. So the number of ingredients are quite limited as well. So I think anyone can cook these dishes. It's not complicated. And then as well, I was writing those recipes. Before I wrote all the recipes, I started writing all the stories. Because I thought, you know, just a cookbook is not sufficient. And people, they want to know the stories. And I've got archive photos as well, which are absolutely fantastic. Because before, when we first opened, the whole lodge was open into the bush. We didn't have a fence. Because with Lawrence, we wanted total freedom. But you cannot have seven elephants arriving on your veranda or an elephant eating at your door, the marula, and you cannot get out of your room. Rhino, same thing. They were sleeping in front of your door on your veranda. So the guests, we had to evacuate them through the window or through the veranda. It was quite funny. So these are all the stories I've told in the book as well. Stories of Nana as well. Story about Frankie, story about all related to food. And humans and animals and wildlife. Wildlife, it's all about coexistence. Coexistence, humans, animals, and even the stories about baboons, about monkeys, that we all need to be able to coexist together, humans and animals.
I guess that's the recipe, a truly beautiful, lovely, delicious recipe is when things can combine harmoniously. So this it makes sense what you're saying. This book does combine mouth-watering recipes with tales of mischievous creatures who gatecrash the dinner table, from baboons in the swimming pool to elephants sampling the vegetable garden, which is one of my favorites, by the way. Story captures the chaos, the humor, and the deep lessons of living with the wild. Please tell us the story with the security camera and your vegetable garden.
Once my head of security comes and tells me, Francis, I'm really fed up. There are some people, I don't know, they are poachers or staff or I don't know who, they put down all the cameras. We've got surveillance cameras in a lot of places inside the game reserve for anti-poaching purpose. So we got those cameras in the trees. And he was telling me, I don't understand. We found some of them completely smashed on the ground in the morning, so someone knows where they are, but I'm going to find the culprit. And 2 weeks later, he comes back. He sent me a photo. The photo is a trunk of an elephant reaching out for the camera. So I call that an elephant selfie because it was exactly that. So the culprit were the elephants. Shame. We blame our elephants for lots of things. But so that was real. So now, because our vegetable and fruit garden, which was made with love with my gardener a few years before, discovered that the elephants, the only thing they didn't eat were the chilies and the lemon. So obviously they don't like spicy food. They don't like acidic food. So I just thought, let's make a little paste, a little thing, and we put it on top of the cameras so that when the elephants start touching it with a trunk, they back off and they leave our cameras alone. Well, we never lost a camera again.
so clever. I guess the lesson here is that if you don't want elephants at your table, you have to serve chili and lemon, right?
Exactly.
There are marvelous stories of the animal antics, and I think we have time for one more. I'd love you to tell us again about George, and his sidekick, because there are delightful photos of him sampling the wares on the bar. I want to hear more.
Yeah, George was a little orphan bush baby, which was brought to us by a rehab center from Durban. And he was only a few weeks old. So we kept him at the lodge, of course, taken care of. We built him a little house. So bush babies are nocturnal. So he started growing a little bit. And then he discovered that 7 o'clock at night, every evening, the guests were coming back from the game drive. So George just arrived on the bar and checking the drinks of the guest, putting his whole head inside the glasses of the guest to see if he liked that one or not. But what he really liked was Coca-Cola. So he used to see a little tin of Coca-Cola and poof, he used to bang it like that, put it on there. So the Coca-Cola used to spread on the world and used to lick the Coca-Cola. So really he had no manners. He used to drive my manageress, Mabona, completely mad because he used to break glasses as well. Then when the guests were going to the table, here we are, my George was going on top of the table, following the guests, literally, and checking the bread. He likes the bread. So every time we had to change the whole bread basket because George had been into it. And then one day, we discovered he loved prawns. And we were serving prawn kebab that evening. And so he spotted the prawn kebab from one of my guests, and he pinched one of the prawns, and my guest didn't like that at all. So he tried to get his prawn back, and George just beat him. He was not impressed again. Well, if George wanted a prawn, you let him have his prawn, you know. We've got the same problem with monkeys as well. Sometimes they jump on the table and they take the food of the guest. We replace it, that's fine. But it's a beautiful story, George, because, as I say, he was humanized. He was a little orphan rehab. So the problem of rehabilitation, I talk quite a bit in this book as well, is that when animals become too humanized, they become a problem because they're too close to humans, they trust humans too much. And so one day, George came back with a little bush baby girl, and she was a little, we called her Fifi. Fifi, she was a small, but she was wild. Fifi was wild. And that's the nice thing about it, that she actually... So we gave them food every night, white tablecloth, some popo, some honey. They like sweet things. And one day they disappeared, the both of them, and they went away. And then lots of babies that we could hear in the trees around the lodge. So it's a beautiful love story. It's a successful rehabilitation story because George became wild and went into the wild where he belongs. Wild animals belong to the wild.
That's you've got to go where you belong, right? So I know George loved your prawn kebabs, but what are your favorite recipes from this book?
Oh my God! You know, I just saw some guests now because the guests love these books, of course, and I look at all the recipes. I love them all. A lady, she bought it because she loves the nougat glacé. Another one because they love the seafood gratin. One of my favorite, of course, is the bouillabaisse créole. I love the bouillabaisse créole. I love the bœuf en croûte, of course. And I got lots of vegetarian dishes as well that I love. But one of the most successful one is our avocado and popo tartare. This one is very, very popular because those are creation. You see, creation of, and they look beautiful. For me, a dish must look beautiful. So I've got lots of South Africans as well. They tell me, oh, we love your recipe of the rusk.
Yes.
This is not exactly
I was just
French.
About to mention your malva pudding rusks. Doesn't that sound wonderful?
I've got people, they just made it there. They put it actually on Facebook. They say, we just made that. It was delicious. But it's an idea like that. You know, why not? you make a malva pudding and you make it dry up, and it, you got a rusk and a very good. I don't think you can find that in the shops. I don't know, but maybe, I don't know. But a lot of things, a lot of these dishes, you see, you don't find them in the restaurants in South Africa. I don't think so, not in Durban anyway. So this is what the unusual dishes. That's why people, when they come here, they say, wow, the food is amazing. Breakfast are amazing. I love my omelette souffle. And the egg nest as well. The egg, oh, it's so good looking as well. You can take me those photos of that thing. It's good. Croque Madame. So Croque Madame as well is a big favorite.
I'm a big fan of breakfast food. If you had to push me, I think I might even have the cappuccino ice cream for breakfast.
Because
it sounds so delicious.
Why not?
Why not?
That's a good idea.
They're fantastic quotes throughout the book. And one of my favorites is just before the recipe for cappuccino ice cream. It's by Steve Jobs. And it says, if you want to make everyone happy, don't be a leader, sell ice cream. I love that.
It's a beautiful idea.
The book also has real life images from Tula Tula, beautiful illustrations. And so it's a beautiful package, French cuisine, an African journey, wild inspiration. Françoise, thank you for this treat of a book. It's taken its place, a pride of place in my recipe collection. What is next for Françoise Melby Anthony?
Alors, my next project is a children book, created book with a whole story of Tula Tula from when we first received the elephants, or even when we first arrived here in 1998. Then the elephants arrived in 1999, and it's going to be, the title is still not final, but I think it's good to have the word elephant in it, of course. And but it's going to be a story up to now, because my last book came out, The Elephants of Tula Tula, came out in 2022. So yeah, it's almost 4 years now. So we've got plenty of, so much happen all the time, you know, in the bush, but you can't be writing a book every year. So this one is going to be illustrated. So no photos, but illustration. Because what you can make illustration, put a beautiful message to the illustration. This is what I like. And there's an illustrator, a young lady in Durban, and we could work together for that book. So it's going to be a book written simply, not only for children, for people maybe who don't like to read big books and they want to. It's a history book, voilà, of 27 years, 28 years. But I don't think I'm going to start it soon. I'm going to start it maybe in the middle of this year. Yeah.
Wow. So, yeah, it's been 28 years of passion, of conservation, of looking after South African wildlife, of looking after our continent and, you know, and our very precious animals and environment. We just honor and admire the work that you have done. Thank you for this edition. Dining with Elephants is not your ordinary cookbook. It's a feast of stories and flavors from the heart of the African bush, where French cuisine meets wild adventure. Thank you so much for this little bit of you and Tula Tula that we get to take home. It's been a delight chatting with you. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Batya. Absolute pleasure. To you too.
Turn the page. It's The Bookmark with Batya Bricka.
Well, Thursdays and Fridays mean fresh magic at the family bakehouse. Golden challahs, babkas, biscuits and cakes baked in small batches so there are no shortcuts. Perfect for Shabbat or the weekend. Find the family bakehouse at Genesis, Aurochs and selected distribution centres. Thank you for letting me know what cookbooks you are using. And yes, there's a big shout out here to Sharon Glass and her series of books that were simple and had enormous impact. Thank you, Kim. You say that Sharon left an indelible imprint and continues to live through her book. She was a legend, and she was indeed. I've kind of saved the best for last. Like all good meals, A lip-smacking dessert is saved for the end as the piece de resistance. And this last book in the show is a book called Upwards by Karen Dudley. Karen Dudley is somewhat of a legend. She's a South African chef, food writer, and restaurateur. She's best known for her restaurant, The Kitchen, in Woodstock, Cape Town, which was visited by former First Lady Michelle Obama in June 2011. And she's gone on to write numerous cookbooks. One of those was when she closed The Kitchen after COVID. But she then began a whole new life of teaching and exploring and writing cookbooks. They are quirky, they are filled with personality and rich storytelling. She shares authentic personal stories like this one. My mom was a very good cook of just ordinary things, but my parents traveled quite a bit in the 70s, which was quite unusual for colored folk. But every time they came back, they came with new ideas, which totally inspired and kind of enlightened us. It went way beyond food. We learned that there could be white garbage collectors and that people of different colors could live together. And about paella. With my folks, there was so much more acknowledgement of deliciousness. Whether that meant hot rolls out of the bakery on a Sunday or slap chips from the right place. It was more about pursuing what was delicious and simple as opposed to very pretentious or what you thought is supposed to be good. Karen's newest book is called Upwards, and in this one you can expect a culinary journey that transcends the ordinary, encouraging us to look up to what is true and essential, living simply and well. It's a follow-up to Onwards, and it has her signature warmth and insight, sharing how the act of cooking can and should be a letting go of life's daily preoccupations, a way to connect with ourselves and others by paying attention to the pleasure and enjoyment of cooking something beautiful, delicious, and even surprising. Now, Karen is known for her iconic, quirky style, not just in food, but in the way she dresses, and interior design and food styling. Her kitchen has been called a Willy Wonka's paradise of the eclectic. There's a large mural of geese on the recipe bookshelf, a taxidermied peacock next to the fridge, and shelves laden with all manner of crockery, gravy boats, egg cups, milk jugs, and a mug for whatever mood you might find yourself in. I think the Mad Hatter would keel over. Of course, there is the pink wall. Everyone looks good against that wall, she says. And you will see that pink wall in virtually every one of her books, her podcasts, or anytime you see Karen in situ. If she would have been an interior designer, she'd do it like she is a chef. And she says, in the same way I help people to find their food identity, I'd want them to make sense of their own expression through the pictures that they choose and the things that make them happy. Life is simply too short to not be with the things that make you happy and feel beautiful. I think it's kind of one of those things that people need permission for. They're like, can I really try that? What if it doesn't look like another person's house? No. When you acknowledge what makes you happy, it always works. Style is about knowing what you love. Some of the recipes that caught my eye, the first is Assassin's Pasta, which sounds delicious. And it's a way of making pasta the same way you would make risotto, adding water slowly, lots of it, ladle by ladle, and ending up with a very rich, delicious, robust pasta. So that's the one thing. The other is, I think, my next Shabbat wow dish. It's her signature salad that looks incredible and kind of taking things to a new level. There are things like, I'm just paging through the book to see, oh, this sounded good. Seared broccoli, lemon, and date salad with tamil crunch. Now that is something that I can make. She encourages you to learn new skills, to look up to quality over quantity, and pay attention to the splendor that can come from meditative cooking. So she takes you around the world. It's at once very South African, but also really cosmopolitan. It really is like a proverbial trip around the world through your taste buds. She gives advice like this. Don't underestimate the importance of a dressing. A dressing or a sauce can really pull things together at the last minute and save you from boredom and monotony. Have a plate of broccoli, sauce, piece of fish, nok cham. And then the other thing that is so worthy of exploring is the crunchy topping, like seasoned breadcrumbs sprinkled on pasta, pangrattato, they call it, which is apparently poor man's parmesan, or coconut flakes and mint to make a gremolata. It totally elevates the game. Upwards is a call to be inspired, to create, to connect, all the time looking up, 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 as we invite into our kitchens new dishes, new flavors, and new possibilities. It's books like Karen Dudley's and others that takes cooking to another level, and it's not just about filling stomachs, it's also about filling hearts and souls. I have a couple of books on my shelf that I use simply for inspiration, Gorgeous Photography and Armchair Travel. The one is quite old, actually, but it's Tessa Kiros's book, Venezia. It is filled with culture, with recipes, with personal essays, regional history, and memoir along the dishes. I don't know if I would actually cook any of her dishes. But for her, for Tessa Kiros, Venice isn't just a place to visit. It's a place to discover inspiring, magical moments. She shares these with foodies and fans in Venezia, Food and Dreams. Even the title gives you a sense of what it offers. It's a stunning personal journal, travel guide, and a memoir about Tessa's love for Venice, Italy, and its special place in her heart and her palate. In Venezia, there are 105 recipes, but it's the 120 full-color, beautiful photographs focusing on the fascinating city and its famous fare. I love revisiting Venice through her book. And then Yotam Ottolenghi deserves a mention. He has become quite the legend. Israeli-born, his cookbooks include Jerusalem, Plenty, and Simple, and they've revolutionized modern cooking by emphasizing bold Mediterranean and Middle Eastern flavors, vibrant vegetable-forward dishes, and more recently, accessible comfort food. His book, often co-authored with chefs like Sami Tamimi, are celebrated for combining fresh ingredients, innovative techniques, and stunning, colorful photography. These books are recognized not just for their recipes, but as beautiful visual guides to cooking with passion and flair in the cities in which he has lived. So I hope you have enjoyed today's episode. We've looked at some of the trends. We have dipped into Jamie Oliver. We've even opened our air fryers and tried some one-pan cooking. I hope you enjoyed listening to Françoise Melby Anthony. She is a character and a legend in of herself, and it is just marvelous to talk to her about food and animals and nature and the world. And I hope that at some time you pick up The Table by Elmarie Berry. Even if you don't like that kind of cooking and you land up not cooking from her book, I promise you, you will spend an hour paging through those pages and just drinking in her beautiful, stunning dishes. And the last, of course, is Karen Dudley, who comes with so much warmth, so much love, that you can't help but taste it on the pages. This has been an episode called Eat Your Words. Join me next week, Friday the 13th of February, when I'll be looking at new releases by South African picture book sensation Refilwe Mohloli. We compile a list of classics that every little person's library should have. And we also explore the world of PJ Library, a global philanthropic project that gives free books to Jewish children around the world. You won't want to miss it. Goodbye for now, and happy reading.